for tuning in to Organic Matters from wherever you are. For this portion of the show, at least we're going to begin with part of it. I'm not sure it'll fill the whole quarter up because I'm just going to kind of pontificate off the top of my head. But it's about La Nina and El Nino. And to give you a real quick in, and then I'll give you some facts, La Nina is lasting a lot longer than she should. So it's affecting the weather around the world in ways that usually they go much more seasonal, but she's basically coming into her second year. So I found out in talking to some people, they really don't know much about the differences and why they come and everything. So let's at least kind of talk about it a little bit. Meteorological organization. Yes, and it's not a political thing. It has no axe to grind. But they're saying that it's likely that the protracted, meaning ongoing, La Nina event will last at least to the end of this year. Very unusual. Becoming the century's first what we call triple dip. In other words, spanning three consecutive Northern Hemisphere winters. Very rare. It hasn't happened in a, I guess they don't even give you a date, in an awful long time, according to the new update from, again, the WMO, one more time, World Meteorological Organizations. The WMO El Niño, La Niña update predicts the continuation of the current La Niña over the next 6 or so months, at least for the next 4 for sure, with a 70% chance through the end of November. That gradually increasing to about 55 or 60% through December and February through the year 2023, the beginning of the year. Incidentally, this La Nina, why we're saying it's a triple dipper, this La Nina began back in September of 2020. As a little background, La Nina conditions in the tropical Pacific have strengthened as trade winds intensified during the mid-July to mid-August of this year, affecting temperature and precipitation patterns and exacerbating droughts and floodings in different parts of the world. As an aside, since my kids just came back from several years in Australia, Sydney has gotten 88 inches of rain this year. That's about triple what they get in a whole year normally, and we still got a couple of months to go. This is part of the effects of what La Nina does, especially when it lasts as long as she has this time. This has a little catch-up, folks. La Niña refers to the large-scale cooling of the ocean surface temperatures in the central and eastern equatorial Pacific Ocean, coupled with changes in the tropical atmospheric circulation, namely the winds, but also affecting barometric pressure and rainfall. It usually has the opposite impacts on weather and climate as I'm going to call it her brother, El Niño, which is the warm phase of the so-called El Niño Southern Oscillation, ENSO. They trade back and forth, but it's not a consistent situation, so we have to watch it on a year-to-year basis. That's why La Niña is such a big surprise after the 2 years it's already been around. That's very unusual. And for those of you that question it, however, do realize all naturally occurring climate events now take place in the context of human-induced climate change, which is increasing global temperatures, exacerbating extreme weather and climate, and impacting seasonal rainfall and temperature patterns over and above or in addition to what El Niño and La Niña does. As I mentioned earlier, it's really exceptional to have 3 consecutive years of the La Niña event. Its cooling influence is temporarily slowing the rise in global temperatures, which is not a bad idea, but it will not halt or reverse the long-term warming trend caused by the words anthropomorphic causes. And that's a quote from the WMO Secretary General Professor Talas. For instance, the worsening drought in the Horn of Africa and in southern South America bear hallmarks directly from La Niña, as does the above-average rainfall in Southeast Asia and, I mentioned earlier, in the Australasia area. The new La Niña update, unfortunately, confirms regional climate projections that the devastating drought of the Horn of Africa will worsen and affect millions of people for some time ahead yet, now that we see she's going to hang around. If you're interested, WMO will continue to provide tailored information to the humanitarian sector and to support sensitive sectors like agriculture, for instance, food security, health, and of course, disaster risk reduction. WMO is also striving towards the goal that everyone should have access to early warning systems, and we're trying to get to that goal in the next 5 years to protect almost everybody worldwide, if we can, to protect them against hazards related to our weather. And that, of course, includes the ever-changing climate and what's it going to do to the water sources and the droughts and the floods all over the entire world. I guess I should mention that I do want you to realize, though, El Nino and La Nina are major, very major, but they are not the only drivers of the Earth's climate system. In addition to the long-established ENSO update, that's La Nina, El Nino, WMO now also issues regular global seasonal climate updates. They incorporate influences of all major climate drivers, such as the North Atlantic Oscillation, we've talked about that, the Arctic Oscillation, and the Indian Ocean Dipole, all fancy words for the fact that the weather comes from more than one source. El Nino and La Nina is really major, but it's by no means the single driving charge. And yes, we do know about it, folks. I talk to people who think science doesn't know what's going on about weather. It is very difficult to predict, but believe me, we're learning more and more every day and getting more and more accurate all the time. Anyway, the ENSO and global seasonal climate updates are based basically on forecasts from the WMO global producing centers all around the world of long-range forecasts that are available to support governments, the United Nations, decision-makers and stakeholders in climate-sensitive sectors to mobilize preparations and to protect lives and livelihoods as soon as we can. And again, we're learning to be more and more accurate about it all the time. Despite the stubborn La Nina in the equatorial center of the Eastern Pacific, widespread warmer than average sea surface temperatures this year elsewhere are predicted to dominate the forecast of air temperatures at least through the end of November. This will contribute to the above normal temperatures over many land areas, including much of the Northern Hemisphere, which means it's going to affect us. Precipitation predictions are similar to typical rainfall effects of the La Nina. Again, those effects being more rain than ever some places, greater droughts than ever in other places. In essence, it extremes whatever what we would call normal wherever your location is. And if you're in an ordinary dry area, it may be even drier than you're used to. In the case, of Sydney and other than even certain parts of our country, they're getting more rain than normal, a lot more rain than normal. But that's still part of this overall climate effect. No, you can't put your finger on any one particular reason, but the climate scientists can get a good look at the whole picture and give you a good idea of what's going on. So give a chance and listen to them once in a while. They've got a grip on it. It's not an accurate thing to do. This is like a doctor practicing medicine. He never knows it's all right and they keep changing. They're practicing weather and climate reading and we're getting better at it, but it's practicing. It's not a perfect science. Now, as I always do, for a change of subject for the last few minutes of this quarter of the show, let's talk a little bit about a place I've been a number of times in my life that's near and dear to me, and if you've never been there, totally fascinating. And I'm talking about visiting the giant sequoias out west. Last year, there was a very complex fire burning in the Sequoia National Park, and it drew global attention as the tree known as General Sherman, incidentally, the world's largest tree, we still think, was wrapped in tin foil-like material in order to repel the flames from the fires that were coming. Hundreds of firefighters labored for weeks trying to save the giant redwood trees. Despite those efforts, folks, we may have lost as many as 20% of that very, in the big world of things, very, very rare tree. They say in a minimum of 13%, it may have lost about 20% of the world's giant sequoias just in the years 2020 and 2021. This past July, the Washburn Fire burned through the part of the Yosemite's Mariposa Grove And the giant sequoias that were surrounded by the automated sprinklers trying to shelter them from the flames. They did all they could. For a century now, government agencies have worked to extinguish all natural wildfires and prohibited native people in the region from lighting the fires they traditionally used to manage their lands. As a result, forests have grown far thicker with trees that, of course, can just fuel fires. The Sierras are now home to more than three times as many trees as when they were managed by the indigenous communities when we came here. But more than 100 million of those trees had died by 2016 because of drought. Longest drought, maybe, that we know of in that area as far back as we can go. Add to this massive amount of kindling, the effects of climate change, a hotter and drier environment, and there's, quote unquote, the perfect storm for mega fires among those giant trees, those sequoias. There's federal legislation now pending, though, that would provide resources for prescribed burning and other forms of active forest management. It is controversial, believe me, folks. I've stood on both sides of this fence. It has attracted support from the Nature Conservancy, the Save the Redwoods League and others, but also opposed by more than 80 different environmental groups. What is not controversial is that the giant sequoias are in the midst of a crisis and urgent action is needed. My stand on this, controlled burns done properly, yes, will probably definitely do us more good than harm. That I think are pretty safe to say. However, there was a fire that got loose this year. It was a controlled burn in New Mexico that at this point I think they've decided has ended up being the largest, or not, if not the largest, one of the largest wildfires ever in the state of Mexico. And yes, it was started by our own forestry service, believe it or not, and it got away from them. So we try to do our best, but it's a very, very iffy situation when you don't know the next day. You can try to predict the weather all you can, but a sudden, in essence, windstorm, let's just say more wind than they expected the day after they started that fire, came in and it got loose from them. As far as I know, still burning in certain parts of the state of New Mexico. So anyway, yes, it does work if we do it right. Is it 100% safe? No. Overall, the indigenous people did it for thousands of years at least before we came here and did fine. So it is controllable, done properly. I think we try to do it on a much larger scale than they did, and sometimes it gets away with us or from us. Anyway, thanks for staying tuned to Organic Matters.